This is CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, independent campus community radio from Simon Fraser University. We broadcast on the unceded ancestral territory of the Coquitlam, Musqueam, Squamish, and the Tsleil-Waututh. We also stream online at cjsf.ca and listen to podcasts of our programs and our website.
Music and talk radio about all things, all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemon.
Hello, 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 and good morning, and welcome to Intravenous on CJSF 90.1 FM. You're listening to campus and community radio broadcasting from Burnaby on the unceded Coast Salish territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. My name is Nicole Hines, and I want to thank you so much for joining me today. We are in the last week of February. We're actually on the last Wednesday of the month, and we are in the last week of Black History Month. We are still honoring the experiences, achievements, and contributions of Black communities in Canada here at CJSF, while deepening our collective understanding of the history and impact on Canadian society. So today I'll be introducing you to a few more Black Canadian women who you may or may not know, who have made or currently make an impact in Canada. So the first woman that I'd like to introduce you to is Gloria Bayliss. Gloria Bayliss, born on June 29th, 1929, was a Barbadian Canadian civil rights activist, a registered nurse, and entrepreneur. She won the first ever case of employment-related racial discrimination in Canada and later founded the Bayliss Medical Company, which actually in 2018 was ranked as one of Canada's best managed companies. There is a new exhibit happening at the Sanac Centre in Montreal, and because we are broadcasting out of the west of the country, for those who may not know, Sanac is a centre offering a wide range of cultural and leisure activities under one umbrella, including a library. There's also a performance hall, there's a coffee shop, and there's like a media lab and music lab space as well. I think they even have community rooms also. So the new exhibit that's happening at the Sanac in Montreal, what it's planning to do is to shed light on Bayliss's accomplishments and her fight in the 1960s for her rights as well as the rights of Canadians. So I was able to find a audio clip from a video that was created by Akilah Newton, and she's the founder and executive director of Overture with the Arts. And in this clip that we're going to be hearing, she's going to be explaining the employment-related racial discrimination that Bayliss had experienced. So let's take a listen.
Hi, my name is Akilah Newton, and I'm the founder and executive director of Overture with the Arts. We're back with another episode of the Beyond February series, where I share stories about trailblazing Black Canadians. In today's video, I'm going to share the story of Gloria Leon Bayliss. Gloria was a Barbadian Canadian civil rights activist. She began her career as a nurse and midwife and made history in Canada in 1965 when she became the first defendant in Canada's first employment discrimination case based on race. I had the opportunity to interview her son, former member of parliament and executive chairman of the board of the Bayliss Medical Company, Frank Bayliss. He joins me today to share his mother's story.
My mom was a nurse and she had a friend that was a nurse. And there was this one place that was hiring and they needed two people. So what they said is, my mom said, I'm gonna go in the morning while you're at work and I'm gonna apply. And then at night you go and apply for the other job. It'd be a lot of fun if we get these two jobs together and work there. So my mom went in the morning and the guy looked at her and he said, nope, the two jobs are taken. Didn't seem right. But then her friend went at night, and the guy said, yeah, you look really good. So when the friend came back, they got to talking. He said, how'd it go? My mom said, well, you know, the two jobs were taken. She goes, no.
Gloria and her friend realized that something was not right. It turns out that Gloria did not get the job simply because she was black, and her friend got the job because she was white.
Now, you gotta know my mom. So my mom is a very strong, tough lady, and one of the things about her is you didn't push her around. My mom was nobody's victim. So right away, she got on the bus to go down there to give that man a talking to. But on the bus way down, she ran into a friend of hers from the black community and said, hang on, we can get this guy, and we can make history here.
The incident took place at the Queen Elizabeth Hotel in Montreal. In 1964, Gloria worked with the Negro Citizenship Association, and they put together a legal case and took the hotel to court.
That company fought for 12 years. Her case took 12 years to be settled. And after 12 years, the company was found guilty, and you know how much they had to pay? $25. Yeah, that's it, just $25. But it didn't matter. Because after that court case was won, it set what we call in our law system precedent. This is the new law. You cannot discriminate based on racial characteristics or this. So before, what you could get away with, you could no longer get away with it.
Gloria made history. Her fight for equal rights needs to be remembered. Her tenacity and willingness to fight for the black community is admirable, and her story needs to be shared.
Honestly, my mom was a fearless person, and that's rubbed off onto me. And I try and honor her by standing up for everybody's rights in that sense.
In 1986, after retiring from nursing, Gloria went on to open the Bayless Medical Company. The company started as a medical supplies distributor and grew into a medical research and development company that has saved countless lives.
When I joined the company, the company's called Bayless Medical. That's my last name. But my mom sat me down and said, this company is not named after you. You have your father's name on this company, and you're not to do anything to sally dirty that good name.
Gloria's hard work earned her the Jackie Robinson Award for Business Person of the Year. This award was given to her by the Montreal Association of Black Business Persons in 1999. Stories like Gloria's and other phenomenal black Canadians are so important to learn about. They're a part of Canadian history and are rarely recognized.
We tend to think of racial conflict, and because we live right beside the United States and they had such great leaders, say a Malcolm X, a Martin Luther King, who fought and quite frankly died as part of these fights for the civil rights. This happens a lot to us in Canada, where our history becomes too melded in and we forget of our own history in that. But we had the same battles. We had the same types of discrimination, the same battles. And my mother was a founding person of one of those fights against racial discrimination here in Canada.
The story of Gloria Bayless is one that truly inspires me. I often think about her story, and this is why I wanted to share it with you today. To end, I want to read a small portion of a beautiful poem written about Gloria by a Canadian poet named George Eliot Clark. George is included in my book, Big Dreamers, Volume 2, and he wrote this poem to honor Gloria when she passed away in 2017. Stan saw her triumph in Canada's first test case against racial prejudice in employment, erase. This glory, no, nevermore. She's not nameless. This heroine of equality, namely Gloria Bayless.
Bird note. Even if you had feathers, lightweight bones, and powerful wings, you would still lack something essential to flying like a bird. The highly efficient breathing anatomy that powers the exertion of flight. The human apparatus of diaphragm and lungs is just not up to the job. It can't extract enough oxygen to fuel flight. A bird's breathing anatomy is far more efficient than ours. It is driven by large, thin-walled air sacs located throughout the body cavity. The air sacs operate like bellows, first storing and then directing air to create a one-way flow through the bird's lungs. This parabronchial system for extracting oxygen from the air has a far greater surface area than the lungs of a mammal, making sustained flight possible. And birds lack a diaphragm. Instead, they inhale and exhale using special muscles that expand or contract the entire body cavity and air sacs. The way they breathe allows migrating birds to fly in the thin air thousands of feet above the earth, a feat we can only marvel at from below. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Support comes from Wild Delight Bird Food, offering a variety of blends designed to mimic the natural resources wild birds crave. Available at Chewy.com.
And I'm back. So I hope you found that audio clip pretty informative. I had just been introduced to Gloria Bayliss for the first time, and I'm already inspired. I'm inspired by the fight that she faced many years past, not just for her rights, but for the rights of Canadians as well. Next up, I would like to introduce you, or perhaps you may already know this person that I'm going to be chatting about. The person is Dr. Yabom Gilpin-Jackson. Dr. Yabom is an African-Canadian who was born in Germany and grew up in Sierra Leone and completed her studies in Canada as well as the U.S. She is an organizational development leader and scholar who centers equity, diversity, and inclusion in all that she does. And at SFU, she is the Vice President of People, Equity, and Inclusion. Throughout her career, Dr. Yabom Gilpin-Jackson has helped people and organizations advance EDI and belonging in workplaces and society. Now, prior to SFU, because Dr. Yabom has like done a lot of things, so prior to SFU, Dr. Yabom has served as Chief People Officer of the British Columbia Lottery Corporation, also Executive Director of Organizational Development for Fraser Health and Regional Lead of Organization Development for Vancouver Coastal Health. She is the founder of Supporting Learning and Development Consulting, Inc., which has helped organizations, including SFU, advance leadership and development and create processes for systemic and social change. Dr. Yabom is also the author of numerous books and journal articles and is a well-known presenter on global EDI, leadership, and Black identity. In 2018, she received the Harry Jerome Professional Excellence Award in Canada, and in 2021, she was named Runner-Up Women of the Year, Equity and Inclusion Champion by BC Business Magazine. So I just want to share that I was lucky to have watched Dr. Yabom moderate a couple of talks this month, including a candid conversation on advancing Black inclusion in Canadian universities. And that conversation took place at the First Peoples Gathering House at SFU Burnaby Campus last Thursday, February 19th. And that was in celebration of Black History Month. And in addition to that, last Friday, February the 20th, I got the opportunity to attend a luncheon and conversation with many SFU professors and staff, including both Dr. Yabom and Dr. Wisdom Teddy. It was so good to connect on a personal level, not just with them, but with other academics as well. I just walked away, you know, Friday, just feeling so enriched and well-fed, I must say. So I actually got the opportunity to take some audio from the conversation on advancing Black inclusion in Canadian university with Dr. Wisdom Teddy, who is just so that you know who Dr. Wisdom Teddy is, he's the chair of the Scarborough Charter Interinstitutional Forum and president and vice chancellor of Carleton University. So in this clip, Dr. Yabom Gilpin-Jackson asks Dr. Wisdom Teddy how he sustains hope.
Knowing that there would be resistance, knowing that there would be pushback. So I'm going to start with you. How do you sustain hope? How do you sustain the courage to lead, especially in the current environment, not just with the backlash, but there's this thing about budget trouble in post-secondary. So tell us, how do you sustain hope?
Well, you know, I think You know, I think it's important that we start from a place of purpose. For me, that has always been the driving force. And that purpose that is anchored in certain values that are so fundamental to what makes us better versions of ourselves. And that if we're learning organizations that are always looking for how we make things better, that there has to be something that you aspire to that makes you better. And it doesn't matter what the challenges are. You know, we've heard about the fact that whole generations of people have been made to feel, you know, less human than they are, and did not relent in asserting themselves and believing in themselves and believing in the collective ability to transcend moments and make things better. And I think that when you are fueled by the desire to be better, that whether it's in sports, in the academy, or wherever it is, that the last thing you want to do is to say, no, I'm unable to. I think that when you do that, then you cede to the forces that want to keep you down. But what you also want to do is to create the space to be able to share that, you know, aspiration with others and to have commonality of purpose. Because we all sit in little pockets, right? And we feel like we're so unable to move anything because we're trying to move mountains. But we have to look at the little successes that we get on the path. One of the things I entreat all of us to do is the patience and the kindness to ourselves. Because a lot of times we're unkind to ourselves because we want to be able to turn everything around in one go. But the reality is that the forces that fight you are not going to relent. They're not going to cede their pride of place. So what you have to do is to mobilize and galvanize people to believe in that cause. And with those numbers, you're able to move forward. Not every institution in this country signed on to the charter because we made it not an exercise in the perfunctory. We made it an exercise that required you, if you're going to be a member of this group, to actually commit to demonstrating action. And that action would vary from place to place because we're all differently endowed. But within the context of your own institution, there are things that you can do. And so that is what, for me, sustains my hope. I have seen enough of people who've been in the doldrums but have been able to lift themselves up. And they're in worse situations than we are. If they're able to do it, what excuse do we have not to be champions of the possible, not to be the leaders that enable, not to be the community that is able to lift one another? So it's not a naive hope. It is a hope that I think is anchored in the fact of how we've come. I come from a country that was a colony. If my forebears had given up hope, we'd probably still be a colony. If Chris's forebears had given up hope, well, you know what this country will look like. And so if those folks, even under more trying circumstances, endured, we have no excuse but to build on what they did to move all of us forward.
Can you share a story about how you moved from hope to action in the face of such an incredible pushback, whether it was about the Scarborough Charter or otherwise? But if there's a story you can tell us, we'd love to hear.
Well, I don't know whether I've got a story to tell you, but I think, I said earlier that hope that is vacuous has no staying power. And so you've got to be able to make the effort to mobilize. And sometimes, look, I remember, and June is here at Hughes, but, when we reached out to those who would be part of those dialogues, the dialogues was the catalyst for what we ended up doing. But it was just an opportunity to create space for us to come together across the country, confront the realities of what we tended to shy away from, because it was uncomfortable, it was unpleasant, and people always felt that any discussion of those things had to be adversarial or disagreeable. And some of us felt that, you know, I remember even putting together those panels. People were like, well, why do we have black colleagues, you know, on the same panel with white colleagues? And I would say, if black people alone could do it, we wouldn't be having these conversations. And black people have not gotten us into this problem by themselves, and so they should not be put in the uncomfortable situation, particularly when they're not in powerful positions, to lift us out of it. Collectively, we've caused this mess, and collectively, we should get ourselves out of this mess. And that enabled others who believe in the cause, but felt like somehow they couldn't participate in the conversation, to come into that fold, so that we co-owned the exercise, but we also co-owned the action that was required. And again, I'm not gonna be naive enough to say that somehow that was everybody at the table, but you just needed those folks who would spark the conversation. It brought others from the margin into the conversation. It enabled people to feel buoyed by the fact that they had a community behind them to drive them. Because these exercises can put you in very lonely places where you're fighting the system. And the system is not a weak system. The system is very powerful. And so being able to have allies across the country, I think, was really, really helpful. And again, I just want people to understand the burden of doing this work. And it's our responsibility to unburden those who have brought us this far, so that we can all share. If we all share in a little bit of it, it makes it easier for all of us to drive things.
This is Bird Note. For some birds, having the best nest is a key part of attracting a mate. Males of many weaverbird species construct a series of intricately woven nests with which to lure a prospective partner. If a female is dissatisfied with it, though, she doesn't just move on. She tears the nest apart, as if to show her disdain. A male red-winged blackbird can even attract multiple mates if he controls a prime breeding territory, where nests can be built over the water, making them less accessible to predators like raccoons. Adélie penguins construct their nests on mounds of stones, which help guard against flooding, and partners often exchange stone gifts during the course of construction. Unfortunately, stones can be in short supply, which leads to skirmishes within the nesting colony, as stones are stolen and fiercely guarded. No stone, one might say, left unturned. For Bird Note, I'm Wenfei Tong.
Hello, hello. That was a candid conversation about hope with Dr. Yabom Gilpin-Jackson and Dr. Wisdom Teddy. Their conversation was so inspiring. I wish that I had taken more audio for you to hear of their specific conversation. If we have some time today, I will be sharing a conversation with Dr. Teddy. You've been tuned into CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, broadcasting from the unceded Coast Salish Territory. Okay, so next up, I would like to introduce you to another amazing Black Canadian woman. Some of you may know this person, some you might be introduced to this person for the very first time. I'd like to introduce you to Debbie Friday. Debbie Friday is an electronic musician, producer, songwriter, and filmmaker based in Toronto. Her debut album, Good Luck, released on Sub Pop in 2023 and won the Polaris Music Prize. And here's a bit of a background. So Debbie Friday was born in Nigeria and moved to Canada with her Yoruba mother when she was about two. And she graduated high school, and then she became a DJ and began spinning at parties and raves throughout North America. Her second album, The Star of the Queen of Life, was released on August 1st, 2025 through Royal Mountain Records and Sub Pop. This album is currently on the CGSF Digital Library, and that's how I discovered Debbie Friday. I'm absolutely loving the album. It's a mix of synth punk, industrial hip-hop, deconstructed club, and left-field pop. Like, it is definitely a vibe. And fun fact, Debbie Friday is an SFU alumni. She holds an honors of Bachelor of Social Science in Women's Studies and Political Science from the University of Ottawa. That was in 2016. And she also has a Master of Fine Arts in Interdisciplinary Arts at SFU. So I am going to start off with a couple tracks off of her album, The Star of the Queen of Life. Let's take a listen.
Just like Delphi.